I didn't want to wear this either.
Riding on the city of New Orleans, Illinois Central, Monday morning rail. 15 cars and 15 restless riders, three conductors, 25 sacks of mail. All along the southbound Odyssey, the train pulls out at Kankakee and rolls along past houses, farms, and fields. Passing trains that have no names, freight yards full of old black men, and the graveyards of the rusted automobiles. Good morning, America, how are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the train that calls the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done. Dealing card games with the old man in the club car. Penny a point, ain't no one keeping score. Pass the paper bag that holds the bottle. Feel the wheel rumbling beneath the floor. And the sons of Pullman porters and the sons of engineers ride their father's magic carpet made of steel. Mothers with their babes asleep rocking to the gentle beat, and the rhythm of the rail is all they feel. You know what helped me out here? Good morning, America, how are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the train they call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done. Nighttime on the city of New Orleans. Changing cars in Memphis, Tennessee. Halfway home and we'll be there by morning. Through the Mississippi darkness, rolling down to the sea. But all the towns and people seem to fade into a bad dream. The steel rail still ain't heard the news. The conductor sings his songs again. The passengers will please refrain. This train's got the disappearing railroad blues. And good night, America, how are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the train that calls the city. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done. Once more, good night, America. Good night, America, how are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the train that calls the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
That little bit of Arlo Guthrie there. How about that for a working man song? Hey, this is Thursday right here in the bunker. Yeah, April the 24th, 2014. We got about a half moon going here, and it's overcast today. Temperature dropped down a little lower. It's in the 40s today, but not too bad, not too bad. But I had to put on the long pants again. You know that city of New Orleans, I sing that song quite a bit, karaoke. One of these times I'll sing it for you. Try not to mess up your computer. Well, don't forget to get your donations for the show in by the 15th of the month. And if you want to add another $5 onto that $20, making a total of $25, then we're going to let you have a password into our special ancient archives of things that I don't even know what's all going to be there. I haven't even really gotten a great start of putting them up from this end. The webmaster says we got a lot of stuff on the West Coast there that she's going to put up there, and hopefully by then I'll start unloading some of these boxes around here and sending out some stuff that you may be interested in from years gone by. How about that? And remember, we still have some war papers here. You know, we've got two or three boxes of war papers, so if you want some back issues of War, which was a great paper, but unfortunately we don't publish it anymore, but you can get it from us. Just contact the webmaster at merchandiseresist@yahoo.com. She'll make you a deal. Well, we got a nice letter here from Matt Hale. Dear Tom, racial loyalist greetings. I'm happy to inform you that finally, more than 11 years after my present predicament began, once again, have in my possession the magnificent Bibles of our great creativity religion, nature's eternal religion, and the white man's Bible. Words cannot begin to describe the wash of emotions that have gone through me having these wonderful books in my hands again. I suppose the best description that I can give is that it is the like being reunited with two long-lost friends, that though still does not do it justice. Rereading the books, I am convinced that, as has Ben Klassen says in the last chapter of Nature's Eternal Religion, it is of utmost importance that as many prospective recruits to our church be given the opportunity and be induced into reading this book, as many as possible. Quite simply, we need to put as many copies of Nature's Eternal Religion and the White Man's Bible into as many of our people's hands as possible. We need thousands and eventually millions of them circulating, because I am convinced that when they become the corner property of our white race, the battle will be, as Ben Klassen himself said, as good as won. Thus, I am urging all of you, all of your listeners, to go to the creativitymovement.net and read the glorious books there, and send $15 per book to Rudy Stanko, Box 509, Gordon, Nebraska, 69343. It is important that we obtain bulk copies of them and distribute them far and wide. In creativity, we have the total solution. As Ben used to say to me, Tom Metzger, the whole ball of wax. And total cure for the seemingly unstoppable rash of our white race towards suicide. I hope your listeners will not only educate themselves with the power of creativity, but will be resolved to educate others. By the way, I have made a list of what I deem to be the five greatest books for the survival of our race. Number one was Nature's Eternal Religion. Number two is White Man's Bible. He rates Mein Kampf as number three, the new Michael Ford translation, which I haven't seen. 4, White Power by George Lincoln Rockwell, and 5, Legal, Psychological, and Political Warfare by Rockwell. Any chance you can obtain for me, number 4 and number 5, by chance, Tom? Well, I just dug out of my library the White Power by George Lincoln Rockwell, and I'll be sending that out to Matt Hill. I don't have that other book. If somebody else does have Legal, Psychological, and Political Warfare by Rockwell, I may have had it at one time, but you know how it is when you loan books out. Let me see. Commander Rockwell was a great teacher for me and a model for me to follow in many ways. One of the truly great men of our cause. Thanks, Tom. I trust the White Power in paperback and Legal, Psychological, and Political Warfare are still available somewhere. These are books that are simply a must for everyone loyal to the white race and against the Jewish conspiracy. And all the other conspiracies, too, to read. We must hand over our next men. We must honor our next past men, I guess, by reading their words. I'll close for now. I hope you are well. Yours truly, for the folk, Matt Hale. Sometimes when they use longhand and... a lot of times longhand's a little hard to read, man. Anyhow, I'll send that off. Anybody's got that other book and want to copy it or donate it to Matt Hale, send it to me or send it directly to him. Get his address off our website, resist.com, our big, big website. And don't forget, we put information on the new phone line at 559-670-1473. And if you want to talk to me, and if I'm in the bunker and available and not right in the middle of the show, you can reach me at 574-267-5036. And if I'm not around or not picking up, well, leave a message. If you have a longer message, I think you can put 3-4 minutes on there, and if it's something interesting, I'll put it on the show. Also, do your best to encourage new people to subscribe for the radio show. I think that there are tens of thousands of our kind of people out there that need re-education as far as moving away from right-wing conservatism and so forth. I do know that a lot of the creators are still hanging into the right wing, and I think that is not what the intention of nature's eternal religion or white man's Bible was. And so I don't think this jingoism on the right, reactionary stuff, which is mostly failed policy, combines too well with the real creators. I know that to be true because there's been a lot of guys went to jail and prison that were supposedly creators, but they were following the old right-wing reactionary methods, and they went down the wrong trail. Now, I adhere to white man's Bible for the most part, and nature's eternal religion. I think they're really good books to learn by, and certainly every white man that you could get a hold of to read them should be reading them. But I don't concur with the church, any central institution that can be attacked very easily. I believe it should be independent creators, lone wolf creators, just like lone wolf as regular. And I don't think it trying to call something a church, or in fact calling it a church is a turnoff for most people. They've had enough of church. Mind control centers. So I think it's best to just say it's lone wolf creators or independent creators or whatever. Okay, that's my opinion. You can do whatever you want. Well, just a tip here. I watched a tremendous film last evening. Of course, you know I'm a film buff. I dig far and wide to find good movies. This is one, Get Low. GETLOW, Get Low with Robert Duvall. If you want to meet a real lone wolf. Now, this is not a violent film, so it's a peaceful lone wolf. So anyhow, pick up that movie. And if you don't shed a tear in that movie, I don't know, you must be dead. Well, you can't escape these numbskulls no matter where you go, no matter how far you travel. Here in the local paper, they had an announcement today, or a few days ago, I guess. They're going to have a diversity rally. I don't know whether it's got anything to do with my presence here or not. I know they've had Morris D's out at the university or college out here at least once, maybe twice. Says, I wanted to let Warsaw Zoning Committee know about the diversity rally promoting tolerance and acceptance in our community. Well, number one, diversity means separation. I don't know where they get imply it's integration. It's April 26th from 11 to 1 at the Fountain Plaza in Warsaw Central Park. Tolerance and acceptance are a few things one member obviously needs to work on. I find it sad how you abuse your position of power. You're supposed to be making decisions based upon what is best for our community, but instead make decisions based upon your own religious bigotry. Well, that's possible. I don't know what their particular gripe here is. You set an example that is quite the opposite of tolerance and acceptance. You set an example that teaches shallow ignorance, judgment, and hate, viewing people as bad merely because they are different from you, is warping the minds of the next generation. We should be teaching our children about diversity and race mixing and how to celebrate it. Telling people they are equivalent morally to prostitutes simply because they look different derives from ignorance. I hope one day you will come to the realization your way of thinking does not derive from love. Well, I don't know what their bitch is with somebody on the planning commission or whatever, but they're going to have a demonstration, man. This diversity stuff has become a catch word for almost anything nowadays. It's you never know where in the hell they're coming from. I can guarantee you one thing, it's not for the betterment of the white race. Well, I'm going to play a call I got yesterday from Craig Cobb from the jail up there in North Dakota. He just doesn't get it. He can't do anything about his predicament now. He pled guilty. And this, I want you to understand, this is a lesson to all you people out there, that once you've pled out and signed a deal, where he signed for accepting, well, I don't know, a few misdemeanors and I think one felony. And now he's going on and on and on and on about it's all wrong and all wrong. Of course it's all wrong. What do you expect? In the first place, you were advised not to bring the Looney Tunes and the Hollywood Nazis to town and make a circus out of the thing. And then once you did, you were headed down the road to problems. So, this is a very small little town. It's not even a town. It's not even a village. It's just a spot in the road, Leith, North Dakota. These people are all teamed up. The DA and lawyers, they all, if there's a golf course around there, I can guarantee you they play golf with each other. There's nobody up there that has got anything to gain by helping you at all, Craig Cobb. They all have something to lose by supporting you. So I'm afraid you're just going to have to ride it out. As you say, your hands will be tied. You won't have any rights to even have a gun. You won't have the privilege of having a gun, even if you needed it. you're going to have problems traveling, and probably your passport may be taken away from you and the whole bit. But what can I do? What can I say? And also, he said that he contacted James Logsdon of the Creator Movement. Well, James Logsdon, as far as I recall, had a drinking problem and actually was arrested and went to jail for setting fire to some Negro's house. I might be wrong about it. I think it was the same guy. So he's calling him for advice. Anyhow, here's the conversation.
Message.
Oh, Tom, this is Craig Cobb right there. Tom? Well, maybe I'll just leave a message, Tom, if I could. Leland Cook and Gregory Bruce are lying about this. We stopped in front of them, and that's being recited. It was put in the pre-sentence investigation. And then my lawyer said they're trying to get a Chambers conference with the judge. I don't know how that went out. Ended up, but the last time I talked to him, he's refused to call me when I've called him lately, and he said that they were going to have the judge wants an open pre-sentence investigation. I called Reverend Logsdon, and I talked to him about what that involves. He knows. But anyway, it's just more witch hunt stuff to make everybody feel how great they are compared to me. And it was a mistake for me to get rid of those six lots. I know that. But I don't know if you could help on resist, but if there's any chance you could ask them to contact this prosecutor, Todd Schwartz, and the sheriff, Steve Bay, and put their numbers up and ask them to arrest Leland Cook and Gregory Bruce for falsely saying we stopped and faced them, because that was cited in the arraignment, and it was the centerpiece of the arraignment. Real dramatic. It's been repeated many, many times from the very beginning by the media. In fact, the media used to say that we threatened people. They really just barely dropped that a month or so ago. But now they keep on with this. And Leland Cook, Gregory Bruce was interviewed saying, we knew we were going to die. We stopped 10 feet from them and faced them. You know, sort of like a Sopranos type of scenario they wanted to create. And then now they're not being arrested for it. And the statute says that anyone who tells a falsehood in the statute and so forth, misrepresents what the facts, they're themselves guilty of terrorism. But of course, Schwartz and Steve Bay won't go that way with Leland Cook and Gregory Bruce. And finally, the third guy, Barry Striegel, Striegel, Barry Striegel, his initial statement was that I had a long-barreled weapon on my shoulder when I ran up to him when he was trespassing on the religious order's property. No, I did not. That's being reversed. That was dropped. See, all these things were dropped at the preliminary by Schwartz, including the stop to face him and the gun on the shoulder by Barry Striegel. I did not have that. I had a 3/8-inch Air Mac computer, but he kept saying I did. Kynan did at the time, but he was on his shoulder, and he was standing way back, but Striegel wanted to name me. He was real careful to name me, even though I was literally 1 foot from him during the encounter. So, blah, blah, they just keep the lie up. And that's the way the system works. And what else? It seemed like there was one other thing I wanted to mention that comes to mind. Anyway, those things are real crucial to the case, and at least as Schwartz and Steve Bay, the sheriff of Grant County, their numbers are up there, and recently where people call them up and say, you know, you should be fair, and call them up politely, say that, I think it would help, so I don't know if you're willing to do that, but I think it would help. Seems like there's one other thing I want to say again. I just know that it's moments. You know, I know they're not going to let me out, that's for sure. It's pretty bad when they can use known lies to impugn the PSI, and nobody will back up on it officially or apologize or say it was wrong, and they certainly won't arrest them if they did that. Oh, yeah, those three guys were the three ones that used to drive by and say, hey, fuck you and fuck you Nazis. They did that real regular, or sometimes just flip us off with no yelling, you know, just not yelling. They do that.
Well, Craig he does not get it. First of all, he used to talk about how he talked to the sheriff about every day. In other words, he talked. He didn't use 15 or 14 words or 5 words, I mean. He talked. Whatever authority figure came up to him, he talked. And now he's pled guilty to all these misdemeanor counts, and I believe one felony, and wants to go back and talk about it all over again, where it doesn't make any difference. You know, I could call everybody up there in the county, and nothing's going to change, and he didn't take it to trial. You got to take it to trial to bring out all this stuff. But somehow he thinks that he can redo what he did totally wrong. And I hope you people out there understand that once you pled guilty, pled out, no matter what the deal is, and you've signed it, they're going to do whatever they want to with you. They're going to do it because they got the power. These people socialize together. They like each other. The judges and the attorneys. And what are you going to do? So anyhow, I can listen, but there's nothing I can do for Craig Cobb. In fact, at this point, even if he had a $500 a day lawyer, he couldn't do much for him. Not much at all. So that's a warning. You don't talk to authority figures or police or like that about your business. You know, I could talk to a cop all day long about the weather and simple things like that, but when it comes to your political beliefs and political actions, you don't talk, period. Not one word. If Craig would have held to that right from the beginning, he'd be out. He'd be long gone by now because they don't have a case. But if you're innocent and you plead guilty, well, because they always wave at you, well, you could do 35 years in jail. Well, that it don't happen that way. They stack that stuff as a psychological weapon against you. So if you talk, you're not going to walk. I don't know whether you've gotten the word, but the VA has put at least 100 veterans on the list down in, I think it was Arizona, or if not Arizona, it was Texas, and left them on the list for treatment for so long they died before they ever got treatment. And supposedly there's probably 1,000 more going to be in the same predicament. So that's what you get for serving the system. Now it's the oligarchy, because even law professors have said this country is no longer a republic or even a ha-ha democracy. It's an oligarchy ruled by few. So you, at this point, you have every natural privilege to say, I give no allegiance to the central government of this oligarchy. But you're not bound to give allegiance to an oligarchy. In fact, you're bound to fight against an oligarchy. So maybe we ought to start putting out certificates of divorce from the oligarchy. Well, this deal out there in Nevada with Bundy the rancher, the right and the left just won't leave it go. And it's a cause celebre for both sides. And I know, and you know, and you should know, that they're using it just as crap. And even the rogue progressive had gone on and on and on about it. And now they're baiting each other badly, like, you know, threatening each other and all that kind of stuff. I'm going to go down there and get you and kill your ass and all that kind of stuff. So it's getting pretty ridiculous. Pretty ridiculous, this whole mess. But it's the right and the left, and it's the left comes down strong on supporting the oligarchy every time. The same people that cry all the time that we've got a fascist government now, and we've got the predatory capitalism taken completely over, and we've got a dictatorship. The same ones that say, ooh, maybe we ought to have a revolution last month, this month saying, oh yeah, we got to let the government handle everything. And they, on the other hand, you got these ragtag militias. I've been through this before, back in the 80s with the militias. They huff and they puff and they wave their guns around and they're going to do this and that and do this and that. In the end, they don't get anything done, and maybe a couple of them go to jail or prison over it, and that's it. And so listen to these people huff and puff and wave their guns around is a joke. Well, you see how these warmongering bastards are keep picking at it and picking at it? They got one wound opened up over there in Eastern Europe, Ukraine. And now that we're shipping troops into Poland, shit. Now we're talking about defending a couple of rocks over in Asia there between China and Korea and the rest of them. They've got to have some military conflict going on because they can't make enough money if they don't. That's the whole name of the game. Follow the money. Military manufacturing. This country, that's our primary product today, is strictly arms to kill people. And the only place they're really doing any good is giving arms to the Kenyans and the Somalians and so forth down there. They're doing a little bit of racial urban renewal down there, which the Black Ku Klux Klan is going to do whatever they have to do. And I wish people wouldn't interfere. Don't send all those liberals down there with food and medicine, all that kind of stuff. Let them fight it out. Well, here's a piece of news that's going to shock the hell out of you. Cliven Bundy, the rancher from out west in Nevada, his standoff with federal rangers propelled into national spotlight in part by a steady coverage by Fox News. His cause has won support from Senator Rand Paul, the libertarian Republican from Kentucky, who is likely to run for president. Senator Dean Heller, a Nevada Republican, referred to Mr. Bundy's supporters as patriots. But if the federal government has moved on, Mr. Bundy, the father of 14 and registered Republican, has not. He said he would continue holding a daily news conference. On Saturday, it drew one reporter and one photographer, so Mr. Bundy used the time to officiate at what was in effect a town meeting with supporters, discussing in a long, loping discourse the prevalence of abortion and the abuses of welfare, and his views on race. Oh my goodness. Now they're going to send a BLM out there to shoot him. I want to tell you one more thing. This is a quote. I know about the Negro, he said. Mr. Bundy recalled driving past a public housing project in North Las Vegas. And in front of the government house was a door, and it was usually open. And the older people and the kids, and there's always at least a half a dozen people sitting on the porch. Why do you think they had that nickname porch monkeys for? I remember when my folks, when we traveled to Florida back when I was a kid in the 40s, we'd go past these long rows of shanties filled with blacks, most of them sitting on the porch. Front door open, you could see all the way through, the back door was open, cracks in the house, cracks in the boards. Usually a Cadillac sitting in front and a big tall antenna. So they had a TV and a big Cadillac and living in a shack. I left an indelible mark on my brain. They didn't have nothing for their kids to do. They didn't have nothing for their young girls to do. Quote, and because they were basically on government subsidy, so now what do? He asked. They abort their young children. They put their young men in jail because they never learned how to pick cotton. And I've often wondered, are they better off as slaves? If picking cotton and having a family life and doing things, or are they better off under government subsidy? They didn't get no more freedom. They got less freedom. A spokesman for Mr. Paul, informed of Mr. Bundy's remarks, said the senator was not available for immediate comment. Chandler Smith, a spokesman for Mr. Heller, the senator, said that the senator completely disagrees with Mr. Bundy's appalling and racist statements, at least in public. But when he gets back in the closet, he agrees perfectly. And he condemns them in the most strenuous way. Man, I would never stand up for the white race. I mean, I would never say anything critical of the black race. Sons of bitches. Mr. Bundy's case is clearly divisive. About 16,000 ranchers across the country pay relatively modest fees for their herds to use public land. Well, I still haven't heard what the fees are. They keep talking about the fees, and I haven't heard how much they've gone up in the last couple of decades. The Nevada Cattlemen's Association, while expressing sympathy with some of Mr. Bundy's complaint, pointedly did not endorse his methods. Quote, "This should not be confused with civil disobedience," Mr. Mroqua said. "This is outright anarchy going on here," unquote. Oh, these cowards, yellow sons of bitches. And a footnote from our lone wolf says, "The Republicans run for cover when it turns out that Bundy is a racist." They sure do. They run like a coyote, man. But you know as well as I do, millions of whites out there, they may be cowards, but in the closet they are racist. And in the quiet of the evening, with all the shades pulled, they might even say nigger, or maybe negro or colored people. And they might even whisper criticisms of the way the bulk of the black people act. Well, it looks like the empire is weakening a little bit every day. China and Russia have proposed making it easier for individual governments to control what their citizens can see on the web at a major international conference in Brazil. The conference, known as Net Undial, is expected to produce a set of non-binding international principles that countries can use in their management of the internet. The issue has grown more prominent lately as the United States signaled its intent to relinquish its largely symbolic role in overseeing the web's global name and numbering system, unlike many of the other 180-odd proposals submitted by other countries and organizations. China and Russia are plainly preoccupied by how internet governance could affect state authority. Both countries are laying claim to a right to manage internet affairs within their own borders. China professed its support for freedom of speech and search. You believe that? But only to the extent that its own laws are... But only to the extent that its own laws allowed. Comment from a lone wolf who sent this in to us. How funny is this? China says it supports free speech and the freedom to search for whatever you want as long as it fully complies with what they said you are allowed to say or search. In other words, no freedom at all. Ha ha, jeez.
He's a ship of toy guns, they say, in the wrong hands. They could have actually been deadly.
In this Coin Local 6 exclusive, our reporter Alexis Del Cid talked to the local businessman who ordered these toy guns. And I see you have one there, huh, Alexis?
Jeff, this is an example of one of the toy guns seized. And besides the orange tip, it looks pretty real. But this is an airsoft toy. It shoots plastic BBs. And the man who ordered these says anyone with any knowledge of weapons should be able to figure that out.
No bullets, just plastic BBs. Not a battlefield, just a wooded area made to look like one.
It's another version of paintball.
For the past 7 years, Brad Martin and his son Ben say their family business in Cornelius has steadily grown as simulated combat gaming grows in popularity across the country.
This is the contemporary version of Civil War reenacting.
While they aim for authenticity in every piece of gear, the Martins didn't anticipate a seizure by customs and ATF agents in Tacoma as their latest shipment of toy guns arrived from Taiwan.
Any kid, any parent, any adult going out of the house with this needs to be ready for trouble.
ATF Special Agent Kelvin Crenshaw says not only is the shipment missing the orange tips required on all imported toy guns,
with minimal work, it could be converted to a machine gun.
To say these are readily convertible to machine guns is absolutely preposterous. The round wouldn't go into the barrel for one, and two, if the firing pin did strike the primer, the gun would basically blow up in your face.
Also, the Martins say there are tens of thousands of replicas just like these sold in America already. The only reason they buy from Taiwan is because it's cheaper. Until now.
He spent all this manpower, tax dollars, and time, and wasted my time, my money, my profitability to seize 30 toy guns. That's what he's done. And he's portrayed himself as a great hero.
But ATF insists that it did the testing and determined that, yes, these can be converted into military-grade weapons. The Martins requested to see the documentation of that, and they were told that they'd have to file a Freedom of Information request with ATF. Now, as for the orange tips, this one has one. The ones that came in from Taiwan didn't, but the Martins say that's happened before with their shipments from Taiwan, and they just had to go up to Tacoma and paint the tips orange themselves. So they wonder why this is being made into an issue now. Alexis Del Cid, Coin Local 6.
Because it's about control. You have to understand everything that happens from the government is about control. Even down to your local communities, it's control. And usually the people with the most money do the controlling. We've got a bunch of judges or people running for the judgeships in this town I live in. They're a bunch of fat cats, bunch of well-heeled Republicans, and they all play golf with each other, winky at each other in court, the whole bit. It's about control. Now, the guy, you didn't see his picture. Maybe I can send it to you, but the black Negro nigger ATF guy could barely speak English, and this is the kind of people they're putting into ATF, FBI, and these other agencies. And it's and a lot of what they do that's going to piss people off is just stupidity, not necessarily designed, just stupidity. And because I say so, I wants to control you white boys, man. You controlled me on the plantation, my great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy for a long time on the plantation. Now I'm going to control you. So your plastic guns can be converted to full machine guns? Well, jeez.
Is drawing extra security, even some protesters.
Those taking part call themselves white advocates. Others say they're downright racist. Channel 4's Nancy Amons is live at Montgomery Bell State Park now with the story.
Well, Demetra, here is how one Hate Watch group describes this particular conference. The Southern Poverty Law Center says this is a place where racist intellectuals rub shoulders with Klansmen, neo-Nazis, and other white supremacists.
6, 7, 8, we don't want no fascist state.
A small group of protesters says in jest that they are the welcoming committee for the 2013 American Renaissance Conference.
They pose a danger to our community. Speakers that will be at the conference this year and previous speakers include the Ku Klux Klan, Holocaust deniers, anti-immigration thugs, and other neo-Nazis, other racists, and fascists.
Jared Taylor organizes the conference. He's labeled crudely white supremacist by the Southern Poverty Law Center. The conference comes here to a state park in Tennessee because the government cannot discriminate against who can and who cannot use park facilities.
There is a Facebook group that has tried to put pressure on the park here to kick us out.
Taylor says he is not a white supremacist, but in an interview, he makes it clear that he prefers the company of whites and believes that America should remain majority white.
Why is it that whites should be happy about an immigration process that is reducing us to a minority? Just to swap out the founding stock of this country and swap in people who are alien? I think that is a terrible tragedy.
The two-day event is expected to draw at least 100 participants.
No fascists, no KKK, no Nazi USA!
The protest will last throughout the weekend.
They're dangerous terrorist organizations. And so I'm here because I feel strongly on that point, and that white supremacy is a threat to my community, and I want to stand up and fight back against it and protect the park and protect my community and keep Dixon a safe place.
Now, this conference has met before in privately owned hotels in other states. Those hotels bowed to pressure and canceled the booking. Tennessee, being a government entity, cannot do that, as you heard, because they're not allowed to discriminate. Reporting live at Montgomery Bell State Park, Nancy Amons, Channel 4 News.
Nancy, the park, the group met there last year as well.
Well, it says this conference is going to take place April the 25th to the 27th, American Renaissance Conference. This is from the Occidental Descent, who took a swipe at me not long ago, but that's okay. Jared Taylor does not want to be called a white supremacist. I don't usually go around saying it, but I surely would hope that the white race is the best and aspires to the best, even if it's not. But Jarrett Taylor is the right-wing intellectual approach to this stuff. He's a smooth talker. I'm sure he commands a reasonable amount of money and drives a nice car. And he's accepted as a white nationalist intellectual. Don't want no unwashed working class racist around, man. We prefer old, well-to-do, upper middle class white guys that will never lift a gun if it had to come to that in the defense of the white race. They would be just like the left, calling the cops. Save my white ass. It'll always be up to the working class, the serfs, to draw blood. The thing we have to watch out for is not drawing useless blood like Glenn Miller, things like that. But the time will come, and then you won't be able to find people like Jared Taylor. I don't know where they're going to hide, but they're not going to fight. Oh, that Occidental Descent also put me in the same boat with Margaret Sanger, and I'm not embarrassed about that at all. She was a eugenicist, a believer in not only cleaning up the non-whites among us, but purifying and making much better the general white race. So I feel very comfortable with being included with Margaret Sanger. So evidently you better get on your motor scooter and get on down there to some park in the backwoods of Tennessee if you want to get the straight scoop on what you've heard 1,000 times before. How many racial speeches do you have to hear these pseudo-intellectuals make? Or like a Pat Buchanan, well, the white race is in trouble. I'm here to tell you the white race is in trouble. No shit, Sherlock. You know what's really funny is these wet behind the ears student types, progressive types, liberal types, leftist types that are screaming at a bunch of people, maybe two or three dozen people meeting in a room to talk about things as fascist. Well, what do you mean fascist? Is it a fascist party? The fascist army around here someplace? Fascist big bank account for funding fascist activity? These same damn leftists keep screaming about the government being run by predatory capitalists, and which it is a predatory capitalist fascist central government that is now called officially an oligarchy. But for these guys to get out there, they make themselves look stupid by showing up to demonstrate against these people that have no power. They're not fascist. They may read some fascist books, but these are not fascists. The big fascists up in the power centers of Washington and New York City, they don't want these kind of people in their ruling class. So essentially, you've got a bunch of people meeting, listening to the same old right-wing stuff they've heard for ever since I've been involved, 30, 40 years. And then outside, you got the same old demonstrators, maybe a dozen, with their little signs screaming, "We're under threat of these fascists," you know, like a couple of guys from the KKK, a couple of guys from the Confederate veterans, and a couple of guys from NS with suits on, no uniforms. It's all just a dog and pony show, boys and girls. Just a dog and pony show. And it's not even a good dog and pony show. Boy, I get a big kick out of these races for this and races for that. I don't mean physical races. I mean people that have races sponsoring something, like runners and walkers who toe the line at the YWCA's Race Against Racism. Saturday will do so with two goals in mind, covering the 3.1-mile distance and taking a stand against racism. How is joining in a race down a road going to take care of racism? Money raised from the race supports the YWCA's racial justice programs, including study circles, in which small groups meet to discuss race issues, training workshops, an annual Racial Justice Institute, a three-day workshop led by national trainers who are all race mixers. So what are you gaining there? All the race mixers come together and talk about racism? You should invite Tom Metzger to come to speak to you. Get it straight. They never do, though. Anymore, they talk about me, but they never invite me. I'm getting an inferiority complex here. It's more important now more than ever. This is a quote. To have our programs in the community, especially with what's going on across the river in York County, said Angela Trout, spokesman for the YWCA. Yeah, in Lancaster. The Klan, a white supremacist group with two dozen guys, is sponsoring a neighborhood crime watch in Fairview Township in northern York County. Well, the best way to do that is just put out a circular, say, make sure you've got your gun and ammunition. That's all you need to do. But these people are going to have a march, a run to raise money to counteract the sponsoring a neighborhood crime watch? Insane. I mean, it's insane. It's a zoo out there. The race is our way of trying to counter the hate that's still very prevalent out here, unquote. Well, wait a minute. What's hateful about having neighborhood crime watch? In other words, the YWCA is supporting crime, whether it's black or white or salt and pepper. Quote, it's a day of unity and such a fun day, and you can just feel the love and the community out there. That's about as exciting as their silly-ass Earth Day, which nobody seems to give a shit about the Earth, because I remember, I think the first time they had Earth Day in Central Park, it took them 3 days to clean up the garbage. I mean, everything is plastic, you know? Everything is plastic in this country. Well, last year's race raised $72,000 for the YWCA's programs after expenses, including T-shirts, race time, timing fees, and generator rental, and other costs. The 16th annual running of the race will start at 9 a.m. Saturday at a Chestnut Street along Mercer Park. It's the longest continually running race against racism event in the United States, according to Trout. And we're going to keep doing it until there's no more black racism. I mean, no, white racism. I mean, yeah. It's such a joke. America's are such patsies. Such patsies. They all want a cause. They all want a cause. Well, to close out the show today, I'm going to read you a little bit of an article put out by one of my contacts that knows where how the mop flops. Now, this is on Fraser Glenn Miller and his downfall of his White Patriot Party. But let's go into Miller's prior life here again. According to Glenn Miller, he only became racially conscious in 1974. Prior to that, he had been a liberal and a self-hating white man, the world's first Whigger, ashamed to be white and ashamed to be from the South. At the age of 26, he married a Polynesian woman, whom he describes as the biggest whore in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. The marriage lasted about 3 years and produced one child, which Miller doubts is his. Miller's worldview had begun to change by the late 1960s and a result of becoming better acquainted with his father, who had been generally absent when Glenn Miller was growing up. By 1974, Miller had adopted a racial worldview. He joined the National States Rights Party in 1974 and then the National Socialist Party of America around February 1976. Miller says that his former marriage to a Polynesian woman was not a secret. Interesting that everybody would allow him to come into their group, being a race mixer and having a half-white, half-Polynesian kid. Glenn Miller's weakness and Harold Covington's exaggeration. Well, there's Tubby again. In a post on the Northwest Front Forums dated 7 February 2010, Harold Covington takes overall credit for the vast section of brief history of the white nationalist movement that is about Fraser Glenn Miller. Quote, "The Glenn Miller section is pretty much mine," unquote. In truth, however, almost half of it's plagiarized from an essay by Bill White titled "The Facts of Fraser Glenn Miller's Convictions." They had nothing to do with the order, published and on overthrow.com in February 2006. Harold Covington's brief history claims that Miller had several mixed-race children and had them playing in his yard with his white children when he was a unit leader in the NSPA. We're supposed to believe that a member of the National Socialist Party of America, Carl Kessler, observed this, but that Covington, leader of the party in North Carolina, somehow never learned about it until years later. Just like when Harold Covington was bedding down in the same bedroom of the Nazi party in Chicago with the Jew Frank Collin and couldn't recognize him as a Jew. Most likely, Covington says that he only learned years later of Miller's past as a character in order to avoid the problem of explaining why he, as a higher-up in the NSPA, had been willing to overlook it for several years. The same pattern is evident in the same way that Covington has chosen even to this day to feign ignorance of his friend Frank Cohen's Jewish ancestry. Then there's a matter of Glenn Miller's consumption of alcohol. While Bill White only mentions Miller's being intoxicated on one occasion, Covington characters him as a man constantly intoxicated. It is certain that Covington exaggerates because at the time of his association with Covington and the NSPA, however, Miller was an active duty Army sergeant and had to be sober at least 5 days a week. He mentions turning down a shot of moonshine prior to the 1979 Greensboro shootout because it was too early in the day. Covington spoke very highly of Miller in a letter that he sent from the Isle of Man to his former NSPA associates in 86. There's an image here, but I'll have to get that for you. This letter is inconsistent with Covington's later representation of how he perceived Miller's character during his tenure with the NSPA. Be that as it may, Glenn Miller clearly did have a drinking problem that was a great source of weakness for him. Miller talks about alcohol a few times in his autobiography. He even mentions a DUI arrest and another occasion of driving while intoxicated. More importantly, it seemed likely that a certain tendency to flee into escapism, which may have been the fundamental cause of his alcohol consumption, undermined Miller's ability to deal with stressful situations in a steady, rational manner. In the early 80s, Fraser Glenn Miller led the most visible white racist organization in the country, originally called the Carolina Knights of the KKK, then the Confederate Knights of the KKK. It ultimately became known as the White Patriot Party. Miller's organization was brought down through 1. Misbehavior of some of his members, 2. Legal harassment, and 3. Miller's insufficient nerve and prudence for the tremendous difficult situations he had to navigate. Several members of Glenn Miller's Carolina Knights of the KKK, who were employees of the North Carolina prison, were accused of harassing and intimidating a Negro co-worker at his home while representing themselves as members of the Carolina KKKK. This gave an occasion for the Southern Poverty Law Center to sue. In October 83, Morris D's SPLC filed a $1 million civil suit against Glenn Miller and his organization for civil rights violations. Miller writes, quote, "This was the beginning of my downfall and the downfall of the organization, which I had begun in December 1980. Since a public defender is not provided in federal civil suits, Miller had to conduct the defense himself, which meant that much of his time was taken up as an amateur trying to deal with documents pertaining to the suit, forming a stack of paper 4 feet high by the time Miller accepted an agreement offered by Morris Dees in January 85. The agreement said that Miller would not break various laws in North Carolina nor march through predominantly black neighborhoods. Miller explained, since I did not intend to do any of these things anyway, I was willing to sign it just to get Dees off my back. The difference was, of course, that by signing the agreement as leader of, I was accepting legal responsibility for every single member and associate in my organization." And after he signed that consent decree, as what I told you, I think, yesterday, that Morris Dees was going to the airport and he asked Glenn Miller whether he could ride with Glenn Miller, and Glenn Miller would take him to the airport. Miller said yes. Dees was crazy to get in the car with him, and Miller was crazy for not taking him out. I'm not going to get into that. While the desire is to be done with Dees' lawsuit is entirely understandable, it's clear that Miller should have sought professional advice before signing that scrap of paper, which he somehow thought would have no consequence. Miller had interpreted Dees' suit as essentially a fishing expedition. Dees had used the suit as a premise to subpoena and question a large number of CKKK members in the hope, Miller believed, of uncovering some real crime. Oh, I know how that goes. After 15 months, Dees could be considered to have failed in his purpose. Miller perhaps regarded the agreement as Dees' attempt to save face, to declare victory and go home, when in reality he was setting a trap and also raising tons of money, man. While the first Morris D suit still going on in August 84, 10 months after the SPLC suit began, Miller was visited by Robert J. Matthews, who gave him $75,000, which upon being asked, he admitted was stolen. After that, Matthews brought along several members of the order who witnessed Miller's receiving an additional $125,000. The fact that a number of members of the order witnessed the transfer left Miller vulnerable in the event that those members were ever arrested and decided to testify, which some of them did. When Miller's wife found out that her husband had accepted stolen money, she raged at him for several days, screaming, "I married an idiot," among other observations. The real problem was the number of people that had witnessed the second transfer. Order member Bruce Pierce, shortly after his capture in 85, revealed that Glenn Miller had received stolen funds from the order. Although Pierce subsequently recanted, the revelation made Miller a focus of increased hostile scrutiny. Then the alleged violation of the agreement with the SPLC occurred. July 86, Glenn Miller, Stephen Samuel Miller, and the White Patriot Party faced the misdemeanor charge of contempt of court for violating the agreement that had ended earlier civil rights suit, with Morris Dees allowed to play the role of special prosecutor. See, once you start signing papers and giving in, they got you, and they just keep going after you. According to Miller, the case was based on perjured testimony from two convicts, James Holder and Robert Norman Jones. Miller writes in his autobiography that Holder's testimony lacked credibility, while Jones lied convincingly. After the trial, Miller underwent a lie detector examination to demonstrate that he had never met Jones, and Jones was therefore lying with his claim that Miller had acquired illegal weapons. We're going to have to stop that for today. I'll send you the whole article out, the whole sordid thing. It's a very good article by one of our friends. So here we go. Well, that's it for today, boys and girls. On Thursday, we'll close out here. Remember, five words. Don't make the mistake that all these other people have made before you. Don't make the mistake of Craig Cobb, who's got himself into the bog, and he's sinking fast. Nobody can help him now. That's right. And don't spend too much money rushing down to the middle of Tennessee someplace to listen to a bunch of pseudo-racial intellectuals tell you what you should know already and probably have heard 50 times. Save your money. At least send us half of what you'd spend driving to Tennessee to get enlightened. Send to me, and we'll put it to better use, or even split it up among the prisoners and so forth. So, 14.5, and remember, all the time is shut up. Don't talk. Nobody gets in your house without a warrant. You don't go to any police station or any office of any level of government without an arrest warrant. Never voluntarily go with them or talk to them or anything. But if you do, well, you're digging your own grave. Now, they will threaten you, and they will say, oh, you're going to do this, and we're going to do that, and we're going to take your kids, and we're going to do that, this and that. Don't let them badger you. Or just do like a prisoner of war did in Korea or Vietnam. Pick a spot on the wall and stare at it. Just stare and stare and stare. There.